The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, and Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. I'd like to welcome back to the program today Shuley K. Wood. Last year we had Shuley on for her memoir, The Going and Goodbye. And as we remember our longtime poet in residence here at WYSO, Professor Conrad Balliet, who passed away recently, I thought I'd bring you some poetry. And Shuley has been writing poetry for a long time. Welcome back, Shuley.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Shuley, how long have you been writing poetry? Did you begin this career back in grade school?
I began writing poetry in high school, as probably many teenagers do. In Yellow Springs High School, I actually worked a lot with Don Wallace. He came and worked with the students, and we put together a little journal, which was really fun. So I got to work with him for a couple of years on that. And I just was writing poetry. Mrs. Corbin had a creative writing class in high school, which I took.
The late Don Wallace was a longtime editor of the Yellow Springs News and formerly made an appearance on this program. So
nice.
I'm sure he'd be happy to know that here you are all these years later. And what's poetry all about for you? What makes you write it?
I think it's always been a way for me to sort out what I was thinking about something, how I was feeling about something. But at times I just want to write about a particular topic. Something will come into my head and I'll just write. It's, for me, the easiest genre. I write fiction and nonfiction as well. But for me, I think because I've been writing poetry the longest, it's just the one I'm most comfortable in. I'm not saying I'm a great poet, but it's just very comfortable for me. So when I get stuck in one of the other genres, I often will come back to poetry.
Is that your safe place?
It is my safe place.
Do you have a poem that you could share with our listeners right now? They're all going, okay, stop talking about poetry. Let's hear some.
Sure. I will. I'll start with a poem that I wrote about related to Ohio. And I should say as a start, as a long introduction to this poem, every National Poetry Month, which is every April, I always feature a lot of poems from other people on my blog. So once a week this year I did, every week I would do a poem from another person. I would feature it. And then I had a friend who would recite it on his YouTube channel where he recites poetry. And so at the time, as I was preparing for National Poetry Month, I started reading a book called Our Numbered Days by Neil Hilborn. It was recommended to me by Sam of Sam and Eddie's Bookshop when I went in there. And he's a spoken poet. And then I was also reading Ariel Francisco's book, All My Heroes Are Broke, which is one of his poems was one of the ones I featured on my website. And because of their work, I started getting inspired by titles and how a title can inform a poem. So without the title, the poem has a very different meaning. And this is one of those poems that without the title, it probably would mean something different, I hope. And the poem is called Before You Told Me. When I was a child in Ohio, surrounded by corn and soybean fields, we used to run tornado drills in school. We hustled into hallways, knelt down against walls. We covered our heads with our innocent hands. At a young age, I understood what to do: avoid windows, find a place in the house, if no cellar or basement, then at least the lowest floor, a bathroom with a tub, a musty closet, a space below the stairs. I learned early on, too, what to notice, how to predict. The sky a greenish tint, the air swallowed into stillness. I was just a little kid when a twister tore through the heart of Xenia, 8 miles away, ravishing homes and lives in a path half a mile wide, the rubble reminding us no one is safe, I could be next. Years later, I left Ohio to follow you to a state crowded with mountains and an edge confronted by coast. I forgot about drills I had grown up counting on. I forgot that green might marinate the sky. I forgot about silence, its omens, its misfortunes.
Shuley K. Wood reading some poetry for us on the Book Nook today. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958. You mentioned the Xenia tornado, and I thought, that is so bizarre. I could hear the Twilight Zone theme because I just went back and listened to an interview I recorded with the poet Galway Connell back in 2002, and one of the poems he read mentioned Xenia.
Wow.
And afterwards, I said, you know, Xenia is about 10 miles away from here. And he says, oh, really? His Xenia, I think, was like a Greek word he was using.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was like, Now, how often do you hear the word Xenia in a poem? There you go.
There you go.
At least twice.
Yes.
Is there a story behind that poem?
In terms of what the poem is about?
Well, just any kind of story.
No, that was just one that I wrote over the last few months that is not published yet.
Uh-huh.
So the story is the part about how I was working with titles. That's one of the things I've been doing lately with my poems.
What's the process for you? Do you have a time of day when you feel like writing a poem? Do you wake up in the middle of the night with some kind of fragmentary thing in your mind and start scribbling things down? Do you have a dream? What do you do?
I have a really, really fantastic technique for writing poetry, which is, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I do nothing. I just, if it comes into my head, I just start writing whatever comes into my head. Sometimes there'll be a fragment of an idea that'll come into my head, but I just start writing. I usually don't know what I'm writing when I'm writing anything, either poetry, fiction, or nonfiction. I start with some sort of scene or idea, and I just see where the writing takes me. For me, that's part of what I like about writing is the surprise of it. I don't like to know where things are going.
And therefore, you don't like to analyze the process.
I don't think I have a process.
Mm-hmm.
I would analyze it if I thought I had one, but I don't have a particular time of day I write. I don't have techniques I particularly use over and over. Sometimes I'll use a writing prompt.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, you have all kinds of techniques and all kinds of writers, and some of them are very superstitious.
True.
Some of them don't like talking about their process. Some of them don't like talking about the book they're working on. They're afraid they're going to jinx it, or they think someone's going to steal their ideas. You run into all kinds of things. And I had a writer on here one time who was so against talking about the process that I could barely get this person to say two words. And on radio, that's kind of tough.
That is pretty tough.
But we soldiered on and we made it through.
I would say my one process is I do go to the Emporium downtown and write. And when I go there, I write very, very well. For those of you who don't know the Emporium, it's a coffee shop, serves food and also has wine and beer. But I go there for a cup of tea and I have a table I really like and I write really well when I come into town and write there.
But you live in Tennessee, so
I do.
You come up here to write poetry?
Just to write poetry.
Okay.
And then also to see my family.
Isn't it kind of distracting to be around all that bustle and all that talking? How can you focus?
I think maybe because I'm an extrovert, I don't mind the interruption of sound and people. And I write alone a lot in my own house, and it's very solitary, and I get lonely. And so for me, I like being around the noise of people. I don't necessarily like to be interrupted by people coming up a lot to talk to me, although I'm happy if someone comes and says hello. But you do like to have the space to write.
When you are home alone, do you play music? Do you have any kind of sound in the background?
My dog barks a lot.
Okay.
That's about the only sound I hear, but I don't play anything.
Because I know writers who listen to all kinds of music when they're writing. And to me, I would find that very distracting.
I think loud music would be distracting. I don't put on any music. It's pretty much quiet in the house.
Okay. Do you have another poem you'd like to share with us?
Sure. And I'll talk a little bit about the background of this piece. This is a piece that's actually coming out in Brevity magazine. And for those of you who don't know Brevity, it's a online journal, very difficult to get into, that is published out of Ohio University. The editor is Dinty Moore. I tried getting into this magazine many years ago. My first attempt was in 2013. I submitted a piece. It got rejected. 2 years later, in 2015, I thought I'd try again. I had another piece I sent in September. It got rejected. They're very good about getting back to you quickly about rejections, so that was good. In October of that year, I wrote the best piece I was capable of at the time. I was very happy about it. I knew it was perfect for brevity. I sent it in. It got rejected. And this year, I was finishing up a poetry collection back in March. And I was in Yellow Springs, and I wrote a poem. And I tend to write, if you didn't notice from the other poem that I read, I tend to write very prose-like poetry. Sometimes they are prose poems, but they just sound like prose. And so I was looking at the piece. I wrote it in Yellow Springs, and then I looked at it, and I thought, I'm going to make this into an essay just by taking out the line breaks, and I'm going to submit it to Brevity and see what happens. And it's the first piece I've ever got accepted into Brevity. I was so happy about this that when I got the acceptance letter, I had to read it twice, and then I started screaming quite loudly and running around the house. I was very excited. And so the piece is called Katy Perry is Crooning and Won't Stop Just Because I Did. Because this is a small village and people tell other people's news, I already know when I walk past your mother's house and the garage door is flung open wide as if it got stopped mid-scream, and you are lining up the contents on the lawn, an artificial Christmas tree, boards that once belonged to shelves, that your brother died 15 hours ago in the early hours of morning, that he had trouble breathing because of flu or because of some other condition the coroner will discover. I will learn about that too, surely, when the news comes, because this is how a village runs, on private information, on what really happened, on what maybe happened, and especially if it's bad news, we pass it along like hot potatoes so it won't burn our knowing hands. And in this way, perhaps, it might not happen to us, not in the same way or not so badly. I pause at the edge of your lawn and pull out my earbuds. Katy Perry is crooning and won't stop just because I did. And tell you I heard about what happened, and I'm sorry. And you are startled because we have never talked to one another. But as happens in a small town, I know who you are, and you know who I am, by name anyway, and you have forgotten for a moment the way a village runs, on recognition and proximity. We must look each other in the eye if we are to ever look at ourselves. You don't know what crises I have lived through, for I moved away and I'm only back now. And it isn't really fair that I know about your brother today. And it isn't fair that we are both alive and that his silver Grand Marquis sits with a cold engine in the driveway. And it isn't fair that after I have expressed my sorrow for your loss, I can step back on the sidewalk and off your lawn. I can slip the earbuds back in, and there will be Katy Perry still singing. And if I want her to start up again, all I have to do is push rewind, which I won't, but I could, while you are left with the contents of the garage laid out on the lawn, and you won't be able to put any of it back. But you can't leave it out either in the rain that is coming down already.
Julie K. Wood reading some of her poetry in the Book Nook today. And you were playing Katy Perry while you wrote that, right?
While the incident happened. And of course I was playing Katy Perry. She's who I always play when I write poetry.
I'm sure. Back in 1993, when I first came to Yellow Springs and found out about this radio station, I called up and I said, gosh, you know, I've been doing radio in Des Moines and I'm wondering if you need any help over there. And the woman who answered the phone was Ruth Yellowhawk. And she says, come on over. And so I did, and I met her, and we began talking about radio, and I started doing some volunteering as a music host. And right around that same time in 1993, a professor who had retired from Wittenberg came over, and he wanted to volunteer, and he was into poetry. And Ruth Yellowhawk, when she first came to the station, she was Ruth Dawson, and she did a poetry program.
Hmm.
And so when Conrad Balliot came over here and asked her about poetry, she was very receptive to that, and Conrad went on to a long poetic career here on WYSO after his retirement from Wittenberg. And he had Conrad's Corner for many years, and Conrad died recently, and we've been remembering him. And I'm thinking, Julie K. Wood, that you remember him. Didn't you go to Wittenberg about the time that Conrad would have retired? Tell us, did you have him for a teacher? What was he like?
I did. He was a fabulous professor. I did have him at Wittenberg. where I did my undergraduate degree in English. It was a fabulous English department. And Conrad was very, I would say he was very laid back. And I used to go into his office during office hours to ask him how I could do better on my grades and how I could do better on the exams. And he would always shoo me out of his office and say, you know, you'll be fine. Just go on. Don't worry about getting an A. Because I was very uptight, as I still am. And so he was a fabulous professor. I took James Joyce, Yeats class with him, and I think I took another class with him as well. But he was wonderful, really intelligent and just a great professor.
Did he give you A's?
He did.
Oh, good. Okay. That's what matters. You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and we're celebrating poetry today on the program. And Conrad Balliet, his long life. Conrad died recently, and we have the poet Julie Kaywood here with us, who had Conrad as a teacher at Wittenberg, and she grew up in Yellow Springs, and I'm wondering if you have another poem somewhere. How many did you bring? 2,300 and how many?
345.
Okay. Do you have another one?
Sure. I'll do one, and it's a little bit lighter than the ones I've been reading. This is one of my dad's favorite poems that I've written. It's called Cooking. I used to know how to toss things in a skillet, how to crumble leftovers together and make a decent meal. Now I only follow recipes, go down the list of ingredients, check them all off. There are rules to know, rules I once ignored. A single ingredient before another, only this much of that one thing, minced ginger, tablespoon of curry, quarter cup of scallions, or it might ruin the dish, throw all the flavors off, make a mess of the intended taste. I used to date boys who bent rules, who said things they did not mean, or did things that they wanted to retrieve later with mouthfuls of apologies. They broke up and came back, but it was hard to tell after a while if they were coming or going, if it was the first time or the last. I dated men with no jobs but with professed ambitions, men with demands about how I spent my Sunday evenings, men who flirted hard, but not always with me. They broke rules, but I broke them too. I redated men. I dated men separated but not yet divorced, men who held Bibles too tightly in their hands, men with tempers, men who loved their mothers but did not like them. I went from winging it, thrashing for sweet when all was bitter, to going back to the list. Kind, honest, makes me laugh, blends into my family, lets me speak, says what he means. And then the rules. Take one big trip before committing. Watch how he talks about his last love. Don't skip steps. Don't accept substitutions. Remember, a simmer works better than a boil. If it burns, toss it out. Start all over. Don't try to save something already losing all its flavor.
Julie Kaywood, that one sounded autobiographical. It reminded me of your memoir, The Going and Goodbye.
It is very autobiographical.
You want to talk about your memoir? You were on the program last year for that. It's been out now for a year, and how's it going with the memoir?
It's going really well. I have been speaking at book clubs, and I'm giving a talk at the Carolina Mountains Festival, Literary Festival, coming up in September. It's been really fun. I've gotten lots of nice feedback and lots of good support from the community, both in Yellow Springs and in the town that I live in now, Johnson City, Tennessee. It's been wonderful. People say now when they meet me that they know a whole lot about me, and it's kind of funny because I'm a very private person, but it feels like it was the right thing to do, and I'm very happy with the publication.
Weren't you recently at the Antioch Writers Workshop? How did that go?
It went really well. I had a very, very nice reception there. I was really nervous. I don't usually get so nervous for a talk, but I was extremely nervous, I think, because I've attended for so many years, and I really wanted to make sure I did an exemplary job for them. I was very nervous, and when I get nervous, I get choked up, and I tend to cry. So I got choked. I didn't actually go to full-blown crying and weeping, but I got choked up a lot for the first 5 minutes, and I had to apologize and stop. But after a while, it smoothed out, and it went well. I wrote a blog about that. It was a funny experience, but it was a good experience. When Antioch Writers Workshop is always a lot of fun.
You did a reading from your memoir. Did you leave them wanting more?
I did. I left it on a cliffhanger.
Nice. I think I know what you're talking about. Well, I fell in love with poetry in high school myself, and I actually brought along a copy of my favorite poetry book from high school, and it's Dylan Thomas's collected poems. And I'm going to actually read one of his poems, if that's okay with you.
I would love that.
Okay. And this is a poem he wrote. And I worship Dylan Thomas to the point where he died young. He died at the age of 39. He lived life hard. He drank too much. Supposedly, his final words before he went into a coma were 17 straight whiskeys. I think that's the record. I'm paraphrasing. Anyway, I knew that he used to go up to various places, and one place that he went was a bar in Iowa City. And we would make pilgrimages to this Irish tavern just because we knew that Dylan Thomas had spent time there, just like we would walk around and look at the house that Kurt Vonnegut had lived in, or we'd go to another bar that T.C. Boyle used to hang out in with Dennis Johnson, all these literary pilgrimages. And so Dylan Thomas, I just love the way he wrote. And this one is called "The Hand That Signed the Paper." The hand that signed the paper felled a city. Five sovereign fingers taxed the breath. Double the globe of dead and halved a country. These five kings did a king to death. The mighty hand leads to a sloping shoulder. The finger joints are cramped with chalk. A goose's quill has put an end to murder that put an end to talk. The hand that signed the treaty bred a fever, and famine grew and locusts came. Great is the hand that holds dominion over man by a scribbled name. The five kings count the dead, but do not soften the crusted wound, nor stroke the brow. A hand rules pity as a hand rules heaven. Hands have no tears to flow. I love that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. I even put my picture in the front. See? You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McInnes here with Shuley Kaywood and Peter Hayes doing the sound as always. And we've been celebrating poetry and remembering Conrad Balliet, who spent a quarter century here at WYSO bringing you lots of poetry, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of installments of Conrad's Corner, and lots of poetry from a lot of other people, including a lot of local poets, poets like Shuley Kaywood. Hello, Shuley.
I'm here.
Do you have another poem for us?
Sure. This one is called "Lost in Tennessee." When you don't know who you are, go outside, look up through the branches of big trees, maple, sweet gum, poplar. The leaves know how to drink the light, how to use it to live, how to throw shadows on the ground. Listen to the birds, brown thrasher and white-throated sparrow. They know when to sing. They know when silence matters. Touch the grass. Tall fescue or zoysia makes no difference. It knows how to grow after each cut. Watch the weeds in the field, black medic and wild carrot. They know how to take over. They know not to take no for an answer. They know to bloom anyway.
Fescue, zoysia. I think Bill Felker would like that poem.
I'm hoping Mary Oliver would. She's one of my favorite poets.
She's not your favorite?
She probably is one of mine, yes.
Tell us about her.
Mary Oliver is a great nature poet. And one of the things I love about her is not only that she writes about nature, but she writes very accessible poetry. So I can understand all of her poetry, which I can't always understand the poems of other people. But I find her very accessible, and I really love her work.
You want poems to be understandable.
I do. Not all people care about such things, and I know that some of the prize-winning poetry isn't so accessible. So I will not say that I am in the majority. I don't even know if I am, but I do care about such things.
Well, I know when I like a poem, and I know when I don't understand it or I don't get it. Why does someone think this poem is so great? And I've been reading The New Yorker for years, and a lot of times I'll read poetry in there, particularly in the last few years, and I'll say to myself, I don't understand. It reminds me of some of the abstract art that you see where you just don't get it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm dense. I just don't appreciate it.
I feel really stupid when I read that kind of poetry. So, and it could be that I just am. So I don't know. I read in my MFA program, we had to read a couple of prize-winning poetry books. And there was one book I really understood one poem out of the whole book. And I would read a poem to my husband, who's not a poet at all. And I would say, "What's this poem about?" And he would say, "I have no idea." I'd say, "I don't either." And so once the professor explained all of it, it was understandable, but he had to translate it for me.
Well, Shuli, I think we have enough time for one more poem, if you have one that you'd like to share with us.
Sure. I'll read another cooking poem. I wrote a lot of cooking poems in recent months. Secret Ingredient, and this was published by the Santa Clara Review. Secret Ingredient. When I want to please my father, I cook butternut squash. Peel and boil, broth and curry. Mash the soft squash against the sides of the silver pot that for two decades has managed magic. Solids to liquids, disparate to inextricably together. When I want to comfort my mother, I bake fudgy cake from a tattered recipe that calls for cups of chocolate chips, pecan halves, cocoa powder. Glaze slips down the slides, solidifies when cool. My mother shaves off slivers, licks the knife clean. When I want to feed my sister, it's white bean soup, Great Northern, grown in the Midwest, just like we were, where one summer she painted the picket fence and I cooked us two frozen dinners, Salisbury steaks, gravy, potatoes, and apple pie. Cicadas rattled songs from trees after 17 years. The sun hung onto the early evening sky, the light of youth and never enough. We ate sitting cross-legged on the grass, scraping the bottom of our tin trays. For my husband, it's red lentils with cayenne pepper, a squeeze of lime, chopped cilantro. When we've run out of words, I add a dollop of sour cream and it melts into the dish without needing answers. When he's tired, when he's down, I bake a yogurt custard pie with berries, a crust crushed from ginger snaps and strawberry jam. It's a dessert of opposites, baked then chilled, sweet yet tart, the outside cracked, the inside soft. When I miss the once, the used to be, I soak black beans overnight as stars slip across the southern sky. In the morning, I add bay leaves, more than necessary. My mother used to make it look so easy, chopped onions, minced garlic, cumin and coriander, and a long boil. It is simple, but takes some time. I shred tortillas, crack open eggs, and drop them in, wait until the yolks cloud over, a pan of yellow eyes going blind.
Shuli Caywood. Reading her poetry, and she's been my guest in the Book Nook today. Does this mean that there's a book of food poetry in your future, Shuli Caywood?
There's definitely a book of poems in my future, and probably I've written a lot of books about cooking and food for some reason. I must be hungry. Maybe that's my process. I write when I'm hungry.
Okay. Well, we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
My guest has been Shuli Caywood. And you've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and we also have been remembering our longtime poet in residence, the late Conrad Balliot. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for tuning in.